Blog Talk Radio. This is Love's Outer Limits, and I'm your host, Dr. Amy Marsh, sexologist, hypnotist, lots of other kinds of things, and I'm with my co-host, M. Christian, otherwise known as Chris, erotica writer, sexuality writer, sexual futurist, and also lots of all kinds of other things. We've got a great show lined up for you today, so welcome.
Hello?
Chris, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. Okay, great. I don't know what happened there in our little tech glitch, but, you know, it's interesting that that just happened, that we had a little bit of silence there on airtime when I have thought that we would start the show with a deliberate moment of silence, a full minute to remember and to mourn George Floyd, who was shot by police, or choked by police, sorry, it was Tony McDade, who was shot by police in Tallahassee, Florida, black trans man, George Floyd, choked to death. It's a terrible time. And so, Chris, let's just be silent for 1 minute, and I'll start speaking again.
Absolutely.
When that minute's up. Yeah.
I completely support that. Yes, thank you.
And I knew you would. I knew you would. So here's for Tony McDade. Here's for George Floyd and everybody else who's being injured and murdered in this way. Okay, I think we've given that a full minute. I was, frankly, forgot to watch the clock and see where we started. But yeah, anyway, it's...
Thank you so much for that.
Well, God, don't thank me. It's like, you know, the most minimal gesture anybody can make at this point. And I'm hoping that there will be opportunity for all of us to do more than, you know, make these gestures. And, you know, it's going to be hard talking today. You know, we have a complicated topic here, intimacy,
mm-hmm.
pelvic organ prolapse. And, you know, and yet it, you know, there's so many other things I want to talk about. But I think if we stick with the topic today, but maybe dedicate next week to talking about some of the other harder stuff, if you're up for it. We'd originally had something
totally
else lined
up
for next
Absolutely.
Week. Okay. Yeah. So we'll talk about that before, you know, after the show and before next week, but we'll kind of push back what we had planned. So, you know, we do our shout outs, and I don't want to do that today. I want to just let that gesture, that moment of silence for George Floyd and Tony McDade kind of rest. How do you feel about that?
I'm absolutely perfectly fine with that.
Okay, great. Yeah, this is why I love doing the show with you, Chris. You know, we're very much on the same page for most of this stuff. So, gosh. Yeah. All right. Well, there are many, many things that cause people to live lives of desperation, quiet or otherwise. And our focus of this podcast is a medical condition that causes a lot of people to really stay silent. They don't know much. They're not told much by most of the medical personnel they come in contact with. And it's also the kind of thing that's really hard to talk to an intimate partner about, even. So mm-hmm. I've been steeped in this topic for a while, but I'd kind of like to ask you first, Chris, put you on the spot for a moment. I know you did some reading up and some studying up on this topic before today's show, and I really, you know, respect that you've done that. What has stood out for you as you went through, you know, the different materials that you went through?
To be honest, a pretty good amount of anger that this is something that has not been addressed by so many members of the medical community, that it's something that so many people suffer in silence and lack of information. It's just, it's, you know, this is a serious thing that can affect physical health, sexual, you know, pleasure, and so many other factors. And the fact that the medical community has been so lax in getting the information out there about what it is, possible solutions, possible emotional components to process this condition, it is really deplorable. I have to say that my reaction has been that, just complete outrage that, you know, we have this serious subject that is just been like ignored or pushed aside, meaning those who are experiencing it have just been frustrated, shamed, living in pain, discomfort, and there's no excuse for it.
Well, I agree with you there. And not to hammer too hard on members of my own profession, so sexologists, sexuality counselors, therapists, and educators, we are also very guilty of not providing the kind of information that our clients need. Again, because we ourselves often don't learn about this constellation of disorders that we call pelvic organ prolapses. We don't really learn about them unless we have encountered this condition ourselves, and you all will hear a little bit more about that in a few minutes. Or if we know somebody who's going through it, you know, a friend, a relative who's had surgery or who is contemplating surgery, and then all of a sudden we get a little bit of an education. So I'm going to take a minute and describe, first of all, what are the types of pelvic organ prolapses? So the one that most people know about is the uterine prolapse, and this is where the ligaments and pelvic muscle supports that would hold the uterus in place begin to relax and give way, and the uterus can begin to drop into, you know, the vaginal vault, as it's sometimes called. So that's one thing. Often that is quote unquote solved by hysterectomy, but that can cause other organs to prolapse and collapse into the vagina. So, so the cystocele is a prolapse of the bladder. The urethrocele is a prolapse of the urethra, you know, which is the tube that carries urine. The vaginal vault itself can prolapse. Enterocele is a small bowel prolapse, and a rectocele is a rectal prolapse. So, oh joy, all of a sudden things have shifted and changed. And those other kinds of prolapses can also happen without there being a hysterectomy involved. So, you know, I'll just say one more thing about this and pause for a second, but mostly it's cisgender women who have these pelvic organ prolapses, mostly cis women who have given birth, high percentage, but it's not only. So trans women can have an organ prolapse if they've had the vaginoplasty surgery. Trans men can have organ prolapses if they have a hysterectomy. And there are rare instances of cisgender males having prolapses, but I honestly don't know too much about it. So the purpose of this discussion, even acknowledging that it's not just cis women who suffer from these kinds of prolapses, I want to acknowledge that the bulk of this conversation today will be concerning, for the most part, what happens to cisgendered women. So keeping that in mind. And it's a huge amount. We don't really know, but it could be as many as 50% of all women in the world having some kind of pelvic organ prolapse condition of varying degrees of severity. So, yeah. Did it surprise you, Chris? Again, I'm kind of going into interview mode, and I don't mean to put you on the spot. But did it surprise you to hear how common this is?
It definitely did. And that's another reason for, my outrage about this. So this is not a rare condition. This is something that you said affects a huge amount of people. And it's just, again, it's something that, no one talks about and no one brings up. And that's once again, I used the word before, but it's the only word that I can think of that really kind of fits. It's a deplorable situation of health education in all around the world, and not just, in United States. I mean, this is like, a major error on the part of the medical community. And you mentioned before the sexology industry. I mean, it's like, therapists and such. And once again, you can't really blame them if they're not getting the education as well. But at the same time, it's like it has to start somewhere. And the fact that so many people are experiencing this and don't know what it is, don't know what their options are, don't know anything about it is really, again, very upsetting.
It certainly is. And I need to clarify a point I made earlier. I said that giving birth was a risk factor, but it's actually vaginal childbirth. So a cesarean doesn't necessarily put you at risk for pelvic organ prolapse. So just to be a little clear about that, increased body mass can also add to it. Those are pretty much the major risk factors. Now, the major symptoms that come along with this can be, not everybody has this, but they may have some, pelvic pain and painful intercourse. There can be urinary and fecal incontinence, one or both. There can be a feeling that your organs are falling out, and in some case, they kind of do. A uterus falling all the way out of a vagina is a life-threatening emergency, absolutely. And then there's, if you have surgeries, there could be surgical complications and repeated surgeries for sort of hoisting everything back into place. And there's a lot of body image and shame. And there's also the disruption of many quality of life issues. So, for example, if you're have pelvic pain and painful intercourse, that's definitely something that's going to get in the way of your sex life. Urinary and fecal incontinence can get in the way of social life, work life, as well as sex life. Certainly having to go through surgeries and, spend that time, recovering and dealing with possible infections and so on. This is also a disruption of quality of life. Chris, I'm hearing a lot of tapping and stuff. Is that happening over at your end?
Not on my end.
Huh, interesting. So we're having some kind of bizarre experience here on the sound. The spirits are about to speak. I don't know. But, this stuff just happens. So imagining for a second that you either are somebody who begins to understand that maybe things aren't feeling right, like what do you do? Let's say you try to talk to your doctor about that, probably your gynecologist if you're a cis woman. And they do a pelvic exam. And for those of you who have not had a pelvic exam, this is usually done where you're flat on your back, you put your knees up, you spread them open, and the doctor inserts speculums or fingers or both to feel around and see, well, does anything feel like it's out of place? Not all prolapses are going to show up with that kind of exam. This is a super important point that I learned, and I learned it too late to bring this into my own case, but you should have an exam standing and the doctor inserts fingers, because you're going to see with gravity the actual amount of prolapse that is happening with the different organs. So super important point number one, if you feel things have shifted, you've got bulges at the entrance of your, you know, vagina, you know, you don't know what's going on. When you ask to be examined by your doctor, tell that person that you want a standing exam for evaluation for pelvic organ prolapse. Super important point number one. Anything you want to interject here, Chris? And I know that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, now you mentioned, you know, some of the various symptoms, and is there a visual component, something about the anatomy that would tip this off? I think you had mentioned that previously when we talked, you know, away from the show. That's one thing I want to ask really quickly. But another is, I know it's the problem is it's like, you know, so many doctors don't either understand this or dismiss it. So I think it's important that if you do think you're experiencing this kind of situation, to be very insistent. And, you know, because sometimes doctors might be resistant about, you know, doing this kind of examination, one, because they don't understand the importance of it, or two, they have been, you know, themselves are woefully uneducated around it. So, you know, once again, it's like, it may be difficult, but, you know, finding someone who acknowledges this is, you know, a situation and is willing to actually do like a standing examination is extremely important.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, you may find some pushback from a doctor who, you know, there are some people who are, I'd like to say old school, but it's not necessarily an old school. It's still sort of this current thing that happens, especially to women, cis or trans. You don't get listened to in the same way that you get listened to if you're perceived as a male. And so some people will think, could think, well, why, you know, why is she asking me to do something? I'm the doctor. I know but what's best. Mm-hmm. And so you may find that you're brushed off or made to feel a little ridiculous for advocating for yourself. And if that's the case, if you have any other option to see a different doctor, I would go see somebody else, get a second opinion, try to find somebody who is not going to ridicule you for asking for this kind of exam. Hopefully you won't run into that. But if you do, stand your ground. You deserve, you're paying these people, you deserve to have the right kind of examination to be assessed for this condition. Now, as to the visual components, yeah, sometimes if you, let's say you're going to look at yourself in the mirror and do a self-exam, you may see what almost looks like little cushions of, you know, almost like little pillows bulging at the entrance of the vagina. And that could indicate a cystocele, meaning a bladder prolapse, or a rectocele, meaning a rectal prolapse. It would be rare to see the cervix at the entrance of the vagina, but if you do, get to the emergency room right away or see a specialist absolutely immediately, because you could be in big trouble very soon. And as a friend of mine pointed out, you don't want to hazard in an ER situation the fact that the person doing the emergency surgery on you doesn't have that much training or experience. The very best thing you can do is to, you know, get a surgeon who specializes in urogenital surgery and do that. So for heaven's sakes. But if you see, if you don't know what a cervix looks like, go on the internet, Google images of cervixes and, you know, look at quite a lot. And just make sure that you don't see that in the mirror when you're doing a self-examination to see, you know, what do you actually look like? And it's, I've got to say, it's a good idea to examine yourself every now and then anyway and become familiar with what your genitals look like, no matter what gender you are. You know, it's kind of neat to know that part of your body. So, you know, let's hear a little, you know, cheer for looking at yourself in the mirror and not just to put on your makeup or comb your hair, right?
Absolutely. That self-examination is critical. I completely agree.
It was really a staple of kind of the first wave of the feminist women's health movement in the 70s, is that they would, you know, people would go around the country and they would have their plastic disposable speculums and they'd, you know, they'd basically have a, let's have a self-exam party and everybody's going to sit down with their mirror and their speculum and they're going to see, you know, what they actually look like. And the speculum, sorry, I'm getting hoarse here. The speculum is for opening up the vagina enough and, you know, get a flashlight, shine it so that you can actually look up in and see what your cervix looks like. So that's part of what the speculum is all about. Not the most comfortable things in the world, certainly. Let's see, what else do I want to mention about pelvic floor disorders? You have anything you want to add before I sort of move on to the next?
Oh, certainly. Well, the one thing I want to add is kind of a side note, is I just, something passed my radar a month or so ago. There's actually a women-run company that's designing their own speculums with the idea of making them more comfortable. So that's something to, you know, keep your ears open for. But I do think self-examination, no matter what your biology, is always a very good idea. There's many things that can be diagnosed by, you know, observation or just, you know, making gentle explorations and such. And so I think that's really a very key thing. Now, one quick question I want to ask you is, you mentioned before that's like if you are experiencing something that you are concerned would be a prolapse situation, is there something you can do in the interim, like, you know, like before the, you know, should you be lying down as much as possible? Is there some kind of physical activity you should absolutely avoid? I know probably like excessive movement, like exercise, is probably something to be avoided. Just because it's like, you know, some people may not have access to, you know, particular, you know, health facilities. Also, one thing I want to throw in as well is you also might want to check, and once again, you're more of an expert on this than I will ever be, Dr. Amy, is perhaps there's like a, you know, a women's clinic or something similar rather than your regular GP. Someone who's, you know, might be more aware of this concern.
Well, that's why I keep mentioning the gynecologist, because that's who you would go to first for a pelvic exam, unless you're in a very rural area where you've only got a GP who would do that. But for the most part, yes, you'd go to a women's clinic. You would most likely see a gynecologist, and then the specialist that you would probably consult with for surgery, hopefully, would be a urogenital specialist. But not every area has them, and probably not in a rural area. As for exercise and movement, here's where the Kegels come in. So if you, number one, you learn how to do Kegels correctly, okay, because there's a right way and a wrong way, and you want to coordinate your breathing with it, you learn to clench the muscles of your perineum and, you know, that whole area, your pelvic floor, I should say. You're not the perineum, but the pelvic floor. I misspoke here. You want to avoid heavy lifting more than anything. You try to not lift anything over 10 pounds if you possibly can. Now, that's rough, because if you go grocery shopping or you're hauling laundry around or whatever, you're definitely going to be lifting 10 pounds quite often, or more than 10 pounds. So if you learn to clench, say, the muscles around your buttocks, your pelvic floor, as you're doing the lift, that is going to help avoid further damage. Okay. There are lots of exercises that a pelvic floor therapist can give you. If you don't want to have one in your neighborhood, your neighborhood or your area, there are books. A staple for really decades has been Elizabeth Noble's Essential Exercises for the Childbearing Year. And while that's designed for women who are pregnant, you can certainly pick up some good pointers from that book. You would want to avoid anything that's like high impact. So in terms of exercise, rather than running around playing tennis or racquetball or, super intense aerobics, you would want to have something that's easier, where you can pay more attention to your movement. You know, yoga, for example, again, check your doctor, for all of this. And if you have a pelvic floor therapist, check with them also. You want exercises that are going to enable you to be aware of your body, be aware of your movements, be aware of where you can do sort of the Kegels and also the clenching of the muscles of the buttocks as you do them. So, for example, Tai Chi, you could actually add that in as you're also doing. So say if you stretch outward or upward in some way, clench. You might want to check on some forms of Pilates. Some things done in Pilates classes may not be good for you. So it's going to take a little bit of research. And I think one of the things that bothers me about this condition is it's really hard to find everything you need in one place. In the vast collection of books I have on human sexuality, there is not a single book that I have that deals with the physiological, the medical, and the sexual intimacy and the movement components all in one place. I haven't found that book yet. Now, maybe somebody's writing it, and I hope they are. There was a book written by an activist that I don't want to name for various reasons that I won't get into right now, where there's a lot of good information from a patient advocacy standpoint, but not enough information, for example, about sexual intimacy issues. So there is a tiny bit. In the sexology books, I looked in the index. If I was lucky, I might find something about urinary incontinence, for example, but not a link to a cystocele, a prolapsed bladder. There might be a mention of pelvic pain, but nothing about prolapses. So sometimes you can find information about the symptoms. That's the other part of this. So you have the condition that's caused by, the damage or the loosening of ligaments and muscles that are causing the actual, physical dropping or prolapsing of the organs. Mm-hmm. And then you have the symptoms like pelvic pain or painful intercourse or the urinary and fecal incontinence, that kind of thing. So you're managing or you're having to manage a constellation of symptoms and try to deal with minimizing their effect on your daily life. It's really a drag. Let's see. And then, so before I get too much ahead of myself, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I should add to the movement. So I would go, again, low impact, be careful of what you're lifting and how you're lifting. And if you do have to lift heavy things, do Kegels and squeeze the muscles of your buttocks so that you're, and obviously use good body mechanics, lift using the strong muscles of your thighs, for example, do all the things you're supposed to do to, have your body not be damaged by lifting. Let's see, anything else? I would say water aerobics would be great. Wow. If you live in an area where that's happening, fantastic. That's not necessarily going to do anything for your condition, but it's a form of exercise that you can definitely enjoy without worrying about, you know, doing any further damage. You know, so that would be a lovely thing. Let's see. Anything else that we should say about that? And with regard to pelvic pain, you might also have additional conditions like vaginismus, which is when the muscles tighten so much that it's very hard to have penetrative intercourse with the vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Or there could be dyspareunia, there could be pain from nerve damage that may be in addition to the fact that you've got, a prolapse. So, you know, there's a lot to factor in here. It becomes very complicated. You may also have damage to your perineum because you either tore while giving vaginal birth or you had an episiotomy that, you know, wasn't a real good one. So you could also have some damage to your perineum where you've, you don't have much between the entrance of the vagina and the anus. So there's all kinds of stuff going on. And of course that adds to the body shame, the body image problems and the feeling that you're going to be shamed. So that brings us to our next part of this, I think. Chris, do you want to say anything about body image and shame? Just in general.
Believe me, I want to say a lot about it because this is a really serious subject because so many people are, this is a whole different show because I don't want to go on too much because you'll get, my blood pressure will start going up because this is one of my hot button issues that, you know, as far as society goes, because it's like, the fact of the matter is, it's like, you know, media representation of the physical human form is woefully distorted. To the point where people out there think everything about themselves is somehow abnormal. And I do think that certain conditions, especially like prolapse conditions, that is something that needs to be addressed because it's a major medical concern. But as far as your body shape goes, that's your body. I mean, you, no one has, you know, a quote-unquote ugly body. It's just like that's human nature. That's the variance that we all, you know, should be glorifying as opposed to these idealized, unrealistic, and unattainable forms we see everywhere. But, yeah, it's like, you know, again, it's like being aware of yourself, I think, is very important for a variety of reasons. I mean, one is self-esteem, but also, as you touched on, you know, being able to, you know, examine and know when things aren't looking the way they used to, or, you know, when you're experiencing pain or discomfort or serious medical concerns. You know, it's a big step, I know, because this is like breaking with so much social conditioning. I do think it's very important to, you know, take care of yourself and understand your body and try to move beyond the guilt and shame. It's a lot to ask, I know, but it's very important for all kinds of different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a fear that so many of the, you know, quote unquote, loveless marriages or sexless marriages that, you know, kind of come across our threshold if we're a sex therapist or a sexuality counselor or so on, that pelvic organ prolapse may be not even the elephant in the room, because we're often aware that there's an elephant in the room, but it is the penguin in the room, because nobody even knows that penguins could be in the room and nobody's talking about them. I mean, it's buried so deeply, you know, and what can happen is that a person who is beginning to experience discomfort, have the symptoms, and also be aware that there are physical changes to their body. You know, I mean, people are weird enough about their vaginas and their vulvas. I mean, and I know that other people are also weird about their genitals and worry about how they look and if they're normal, quote unquote, and so on. So, yeah, I think we definitely need to do a whole show or two or three about this, Chris. But just speaking in terms of this particular condition, people will begin to withdraw from their partners or they'll want the lights off. You know, we're only going to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
Penetrative sex in the dark. Maybe they will not want to receive oral sex anymore because they're afraid of what their partner's reactions might be. you know, there's all kinds of things that can go on that cause, and again, I'm speaking mostly of cisgender women here, that would cause a woman to begin to withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's a pretty decent relationship and they haven't been actually verbally shamed by their partner. Okay, so I shouldn't say that's the best relationship, but that's like a good case scenario, not best case scenario, but the shame is still going to be there. Worst case scenarios is when somebody has actually expressed disgust,
mm-hmm.
horror, dislike, or refused to do certain things that you used to enjoy together because all of a sudden the woman's body has changed. You know,
mm-hmm.
then like, boom, forget it. You know, nothing's going to be happening in that relationship, at least not from a consensual standpoint. There's just like so much that goes on. There's also the issue of surgeries. Now, let's say you have a pretty good doctor. You've been assessed. You've had the right exams. You've been told to what degree your prolapse or prolapses are. You've been offered
mm-hmm.
surgical options. And I'm not going to go into all those surgeries because, frankly, they seem to be changing all the time, you know. Or, for example, there were surgeries using a form of artificial plastic mesh that now are not being done because the FDA has recalled these meshes for pelvic prolapse surgeries. So I'm not up to date on the different surgical options that are available today. That's a topic for a medical person. But let's say you've
mm-hmm.
been offered a choice of either looking at surgeries or maybe the use of a pessary. So pessaries, this is a word that I had heard for a while, never really knew what they were, never really knew what they looked like, and they come in all kinds of shapes. And they've actually been used for millennia, as it seems. You know, that it seems that this is a problem that's been with people, humanity, for a long time, and things have been used as pessaries to keep organs in place, probably mostly the uterus. But these days, the modern pessaries are made out of a flexible silicone. Again, they came into all kinds of shapes and sizes. Some are so difficult to insert and remove that you have to go see the doctor like every few months to have that done. Some are very easy to just kind of pop in and out, kind of like a diaphragm. If anybody remembers diaphragms back in the day, I'm not sure if they're in much use these days, but a diaphragm, you know, would be flexible and you'd pop it into the vagina and it would sit over the cervix. Well, a pessary is kind of like that, you know, that you crunch it up a little bit and you put it inside and try and get it in position. I was reluctant. I'm going to say I have pelvic organ prolapses, and I won't get into too much detail, but I definitely did not have adequate medical advice on this, and I'm really kind of pissed off myself about how things went.
Mm-hmm.
But once I had a good pelvic floor therapist at one point and a good doctor and began to learn a little more and understand things, I still wasn't sure I wanted to go for this pessary option. But you know what? I'm super glad I did. For the one hand, it gives me room so that as I consider surgical prospects, and I'm not sure that I will, but as I consider that as an option, the pessary helps to keep things from getting worse. The one I have looks like almost like part of a flying saucer. You know, it's like a space-age device. Every now and then, every couple of days, really, I take it out. I clean it. I have a few days where I don't wear it. If I know I'm going to the grocery store in this time of COVID-19 social isolation and I'll have to carry grocery bags, well, then I'll use the pessary because that's helpful. My biggest concern is if I have to evacuate during a California wildfire and it's not a day that I have the pessary in, will I remember to grab it? So I have to say there's a lot that goes into consideration and use of these things, but I find them very handy, and you know, they're low risk. There can be, for some people, there can be lesions or discomfort. It's definitely something where you should continue to be monitored by your doctor just to make sure that, you know, there aren't lesions, or that if you need a different advice, you know, different type, size, or shape, that you should get that. So I encourage everybody to research pessaries as an option. They seem a little old-fashioned, because they are, but they're also quite helpful. And there are some of them you can keep in when you're having sexual intercourse, vaginal sexual intercourse. Some you would want to take out. The little handy folder that I have says that the doctor should give you advice about pessary usage during sexual activity. And I'm here to say my doctor did not do that when she fitted me for this thing. So, and I was kind of too, I don't know, freaked out or intimidated to ask. And that's me, a sexologist, saying that. How is it for those who don't even have that kind of, what do I want to say, positive, potential positive reinforcement for, you know, patient advocacy and sex education? You know, I guess I'm just saying it's a common experience to be intimidated in the doctor's office. So no matter what your education, social status, whatever. So, Chris, have you ever seen a picture of a pessary? Did you find any images of those things when you were researching this? Putting you on the spot again, of course.
Unfortunately, I didn't. No, you're never putting me on the spot. I want to say thank you, and you're so special and brave for bringing that, you know, your own personal experiences. I really want to thank you for that, because that's very, you know, it can be very, very challenging to do, and I want to applaud that. But you know, I really understand about not doing the medical side of things. I mean, like I said, it's something that you should talk, you know, talk to your doctor about. And similar, though, one thing to consideration is that, you know, very often, you know, any kind of surgery is going to bring with it risks. I mean, you know, just the nature of surgery alone. And right. So not only is it important to find medical resources who understand, you know, prolapse conditions, but also understand the benefits and drawbacks about each particular, as opposed to here's the surgery, live with it, you know, or something similar. So, you know, it's kind of a very important, it actually is a very important thing to keep in mind when you're doing any kind of surgery, in particular surgery in your lower abdomen. So, you know, once again, it might take work, but, you know, it is really important to educate and find people involved, you know, who are going to be treating you, who are equally, you know, as educated. So now I do hope, I mean, I know you're going to do this, but I do know you there are many, you know, sites and stuff where people can go to get information of prolapse conditions. And I know you're going to bring that up in a second, but, you know, that, you know, looking up the research on this is really important as well. Self-education is, I think, critical.
Right, exactly. And and you were reading my mind, because that was, you know, the second to the next thing on my list was to give some sources for good information. If the COVID-19 pandemic hadn't taken place, I was going to be presenting on June 4th a workshop for the ASECT convention that is now canceled, of course. ASECT being the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, and they accepted my proposal to do a workshop called Put Pelvic Organ Prolapse on Your Radar. And I was, you know, I began gathering peer-reviewed studies on all aspects of this. I created a Dropbox folder for some of my colleagues to be able to access, because one of my big goals was to begin to ask my colleagues to begin to put this on their radar and factor this in when they're working with their clients. So one of the good sites is Voices for PFD. So So that's www.voicesforpfd.org. So that's a great one. There are a lot of handout sheets and fact sheets that go into prolapses, that go into pessaries, that go into different kinds of surgeries. And before I leave the topic of surgery, I want to talk about one in particular, and there's a reason for that, even though I said I didn't want to focus on it, you know, a few minutes ago. Most of the surgeries that I've heard about for pelvic organ prolapses have to do with, I shouldn't say have to do with, they take about 6 to 8 weeks of recovery time minimum. And during that time, you shouldn't be lifting anything over 5 to 10 pounds for sure. Better 5 or under than anything else. So, you know, that's rough, especially if you're someone who's caring for small children or, you know, involved with anything else that requires a lot of lifting. And you need to have good backup. You know, you need to have people who are going to help you out with a lot of stuff as you recover. But the one surgery that takes only 3 weeks and has the fewest complications and the least need for, being redone is something called colpoclesis. And it's a vaginal closure surgery. And you can find a fact sheet on it, and it's a good fact sheet. And this is for people who are willing to give up. Wow, there's a lot of background noise there. What's going on?
Yeah, it's my neighbors being, insensitive as usual. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm so sorry. I was hearing that, and I was hearing some clumping around or some objects being moved as well. I get very distracted when I hear, you know, different noises. So anyway, so this vaginal closure surgery, let's say you could be cool with that. Maybe you've got other ways that you know how to enjoy yourself sexually, and, you know, you know that you could do oral sex, giving and receiving, anal sex, outer course, many, many other ways,
mm-hmm.
erotic massage, erotic hypnosis, all kinds of great things you can do that actually are sex. You know, it's not just penetrative intercourse with a penis and a vagina. So vaginal closure surgery could make sense for a lot of people who go, you know what, I'd be cool with that. You know, I won't have vaginal intercourse anymore, but there are so many other things that I could be doing. Unfortunately, a lot of surgeons refuse to give this surgery, even if it is requested, because they just, I don't know, is that our only value is that we are supposedly, you know, able to have penetrative sex? I mean, they're unwilling, unless somebody is really elderly, they're unwilling to do this surgery that has the least amount of complications at the quickest recovery time. It blows me away. And then one of the things I have to say about the Voices for PFD fact sheet on this is they say right up front, it is done for women who are no longer least sexually active. And again, that is a limitation of the term sexually active to only penis-vagina intercourse. And I've written an email to this organization saying you really need to change this language. Haven't heard back. But it's also an opportunity for us as sexologists and sexuality educators, therapists, et cetera, to let our patients, our clients know, hey, sexually active means a whole lot of other things. And if you want to consider the surgery, we'll help you and your partner learn how to navigate. And somebody who's really great at this is Joan Price, who has written a number of books on aging and sexuality. And she has a whole online workshop on what she calls sex without penetration or outer course. I forget the exact title, but if you go to joanprice.com, she's brilliant. I want to give her a shout out actually at the, you know, towards the end of this. There's a lot more options, and any sex therapist or sexologist, sexuality counselor, educator worth their salt should be able to help you out with this. And this is where counseling, our kind of counseling, can be so important, because we can help people find new ways to be intimate, or embroider the ways that they're already intimate and add to and enhance those, so that this surgical option could be more acceptable. And we also need to educate the medical people, the surgeons, as to why they should not balk at providing this if requested. I mean, it's one thing if you just really, for some physiological reason, should not have this surgery. But for the most part, it's a knee-jerk refusal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really upsets me. Before you say some stuff, I'm just going to say we do have some time for call-in. If one or two people wanted to call in, we're getting close to the end of the hour, but if you want to call in at 516-531-9238, you could have questions answered or say a few things about your experience about, or questions about, pelvic organ prolapse. Okay, so what else would you like to add?
Oh, first of all, I want to thank you very much for this information. I think this is extremely important, and I know you'll probably put in the show notes about where to find these resources, but you've written extensively on this as well, so I really want to do a call out to your blog and sites, because that's really an invaluable piece of information. And unfortunately, I think I just want to kind of like touch on one little quick thing which you brought up. It's like the real issue in many of the situations, especially around the surgery, is once again the medical profession often being so reluctant to listen to patient requests about control of their own body. I've heard
yes.
many reports of cisgendered women who want to get a hysterectomy for whatever reason and the doctor refusing. That is unconscionable. It's your body, your decision. If you want to take a medical risk, you should be informed of it, but no doctor should refuse something that you have determined will improve your quality of life. That is simply unconscionable. And once again, it gets back to, you know, the whole issue again of, you know, this prejudice against, you know, a prejudice towards only penetrative sex. That is such an antiquated idea. And to see it parroted by medical professionals, I use that term loosely, mm-hmm. is really infuriating. I mean, sex is not just penetration. There are, a rainbow of different forms of sex can take and still be perfectly, pleasurable and arousing, and as long as it's done consensually, wonderful. So this, ancient bias really needs, people need to be more vocal about it. I'm trying to add my voice to this, and I know you are, that sex doesn't always involve penetration. There are so many other options.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, we're on the same page with this. The thing that I find really sad, and I was in a Facebook support group for a while for mostly cis women who had prolapses, and it was mainly heterosexual cis women. And there were just so many really sad tales of women who were partnered with generally men. The one out lesbian on the in the group during the time I was in it, was not having any problem at all with her female partner, but everybody else who was partnered with men, a lot of them were really getting kind of the attitude from their partners that if there isn't penetration, it's not sex. And having resentment and anger directed at them, even if they didn't want to have penetrative sex because it hurt, their partners were upset with them, and sometimes, rather, let's say, could be abusive, if not directly sexually, at least verbally. So this deeply, deeply entrenched idea that if you're a cis woman, you only have value as far as you allow access to your vagina. This is a long battle. The feminists of different waves and successions have been talking about this forever, but it's, you know, it's a sad thing to find this still operable in relationships, and it's a super sad thing to find this still reflected in the attitude of people in the medical profession, as you just pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
We really have to do a better job of informing people about this topic, normalizing it, because a huge amount of people are experiencing these conditions in various degrees. And, you know, again, changing the sexual culture to really embrace and enjoy these, you know, this wider range of options that both you and I have talked about. It really has to be done. There are people out there doing some good work. The pelvic floor therapists and their community and professional groups, absolutely amazing. You know, it's your best friend. This profession can be your absolute best friend. In some cases, pelvic floor therapy can actually correct the condition so that you don't even have to have surgery or even wear a pessary. Yeah, so depending on the degree of severity, yes. The other thing that pelvic floor therapy will do for you, and also, you know, which includes learning how to do the Kegels properly and also quite often application of topical estrogen inside the vagina to help thicken the walls. You know, if you're postmenopausal and you are going to have surgery, you're considering it, you want that topical estrogen to help create a more robust tissue so that the surgeon has, you know, something to work with that will not tear when doing sutures. But getting back to the pelvic floor therapist, that person may very well be able to help you correct at least some, if not all, of the prolapse. So again, finding this information though in one place, really tough. And if you are transgender or non-binary and you still need to deal with this issue medically, it's going to be even harder to find the information you need all in one place. So there's big work ahead of us on this. So we're very close to the end of our time. Nobody's called in, and that's too bad, but maybe they will someday. Any final words as we go into the last couple minutes of the show?
Oh, just to thank you so much for this. I think this is such an important topic and one I think we probably should revisit again, because there's so much information to really kind of, once again, add to the importance of getting the word out about the condition, options around it, you know, body shame and so forth. This is a very serious topic, and I want to thank you for your articles, essays, and for this wonderful podcast with you. I really have to applaud you.
Well, thank you, Chris. And I want to thank you, too, for being, you know, a co-host who likes to get informed on the topic. So with that, I'm going to say goodbye. See you all next week, or we won't see you, but you know what I mean. Hope that you will join us again. Chris, have a wonderful rest of the weekend, and the same to all of you listeners. And again, please keep Tony McDade and George Floyd and all the other people in our minds. All right. Take care and goodbye.